bottom of Chaf Ches Amud Aleph, two lines up from the bottom, Tana Rabbanan, and we're discussing more about the Hachraza, the announcement of the finder, and exactly what is the formulation, the Nusach, the proper text of his announcement. And the Braisa, Tana Rabbanan, establishes that when he announces Beregel Rishon, we learned earlier in the Mishnah, in the name of Rabbi Yehuda, that he should announce the find three regolim in a row, three consecutive regolim, and at the end of the third regel, he should wait 7 days and give a chance, an opportunity for anyone who may have lost that kind of an object to go back home, check out his repertoire of that object and see his wardrobe, see if he may have lost it and come back, so that by the seventh day he's back to hear the Achraza. Regel Rishon, our Bryce establishes that on the first of these three regalim, Omer, the declaration should be Regel Rishon. This is the first of my series of three announcements. Why is it important that he notify the public that this is the first of the three? So that in the audience, in event that the person who owns this lost object is listening, he's not going to have to go back and to his home with that long trek and come back to Yerushalayim immediately, but rather he'll realize that this is only the first of three announcements. That gives him the opportunity to be a little bit more laid back and wait for the next regel. Regel Sheni Omer, so too on the second announcement, the finder should declare Regel Sheni, this is the second, and once again notifying the Baal HaVeda that he can come back on Regel Shlishi. Regel Shlishi Omer Stam. To differentiate the third announcement, the third regel from the first two, the Motzi should not mention anything. The finder should not declare that this is Regel Rishon, Regel Sheni, Regel Shlishi, leave it all out. Just say Stam. Stam means, in a general sense, I found a lost object. And this will send the message to the owner of the object that this is the last of three, and he's got to rush home and come back in time for the seventh day after the Regel Shlishi. So the Gemara asks on this price of Amai, Lema Regel Shlishi, what do you lose by requiring the finder to announce that this is the third Regel? And the answer is, the lowest Asi Lechlufei B'Sheni, that perhaps people in the audience might mistakenly have heard that this is Regel Sheni. They didn't hear the word Shlishi. Or the Meiri says, perhaps they're mistaken and they think that Regel Shlishi was a slip of the tongue on the part of the finder and he really meant to say Regel Sheni. In any event, there may be some mistake here in which the people in the audience will not hear clearly Regel Shlishi, and they may think Regel Sheni, and therefore they have plenty of time, they're not in any rush. The one who lost the object is not in any rush to get back. He thinks he has Regel Shlishi coming up. The Gemara says, if that be the case, then Sheni Nami, when he makes the announcement that this is the second Regel, Asilach Lufei Berishon, maybe people will have thought mistakenly that what he announced was this is Regel Rishon. So the Gemara answers, that's not a problem, Hakasi Regel Shlishi. Even if he mistakenly came to the conclusion that this was Regel Rishon, when in fact it was Regel Sheni, he's still going to come back for the third Regel, thinking that that's the second Regel. So even in the context of his mistake, he's not going to lose the object because he's going to come back on Regel Shlishi and then he'll retrieve his object. But on Regel Shlishi, that's where we have to be critical and avoid mistakes, because if he hears Regel Sheni instead of Regel Shlishi, or he thinks that the announcement was meant to be Regel Sheni, he's going to mistakenly think he has a third opportunity. When this is the third opportunity, he's going to lose his Aveda. Tana Rabbana, we learned in a Braisa. The Braisa addresses the question of now, after Churban Abayis, but he's shown back at the time the Beis Hamikdash, Kol Misha Motza Veda Yamachris Oleh Shalosh Regolim, When the Mikdash stood, then it was the mechanics of Hachshavas Aveda was pretty straightforward. It was meaningful and successful because the finder would announce for three regalim consecutively that he found an Aveda. A week after the last of the three regalim, he would announce again the Aveda Kadesh Yelech Shlosha V'yachzor Shlosh V'yachmiz Yom Echad. This would facilitate the ability of the owner of the object to go back home following the third Aveda, check out his possessions, his properties, come back 3 days later. It's a 3 day trip times two in both directions, and he'll hear the announcement on the seventh day. But Mishachara Beis HaMikdash, and here of course the Mishnah cannot overcome its compelling need to add a prayer when you mention the Beis HaMikdash, may it be rebuilt speedily in that time. Says Kinu Sheyu Machrizin Bebate Knesios Bebate Midrashos. They made a takana. They established that the announcement should be made in the synagogues, in the houses of worship. That's where people would gather together, assemble, and that would send out the word. Misha Rabu Anasim. But when people, it got to the point where people who were not uncouth, you know, they were really thieves, so to speak. They were not upstanding citizens, to say it in a, to understate it. These were the anasim. They would force a person, when they heard the announcement, they were very eager to get that object, they would force him to fork it over, to pass it over. And therefore, eskinu shiyu modim lishchenov ulemiyuodov vidayo. He would no longer have to make this public announcement. He would just notify people in his circle, whether it be he would notify his shchenim. And here we have an issue as to whose shchenim we're referring to. Are we referring to the neighbors who are in close proximity of the location where he found the object, or referring to the neighbors of the finder? And l'chora, it's not enough to assume that the word shchenov and interpret is referring to the shchenim of the motzi, of the finder, because the next word in the Mishnah is miyuadav. That word miyuadav would seem to indicate that he's notifying his cohorts, means his associates, his friends, his meaning that of the finder. But rather, the word shchenov is referring to the neighbors who live in the area where he found it. So let's say, for example, the finder lives in Katamon, but he found the object in Har Nof, so he's got to notify the people in Har Nof. That's where he found the object. He has to notify his buddies and his neighbors in Katamon if he's in good, you know, good standings with them, and he can communicate with them, and that's enough. We no longer want to have this public announcement that he found something because of the possible repercussions. My Misha Rabu Anasim. What does the Brisa mean when it says that there was a ribui of this dangerous situation of the Anasim? Who are these people who are willing to steal an object by forcing the finder to cough it up? And the Gemara answers, these are Shlichei HaMalchus. These are the officers of the messengers and the agents of the officers of the king's court, the Amri Avedos Elamalka. They established that if any object was found, it has to be returned. It becomes the possession of the government, and we are here as the agents of the government to force you to give up this lost object. The Ami Ashkach Udyosa Udya Didinri. Rav Ashi found, he chanced upon a utensil called Udya, and it was full of dinrin. Dinrin means gold coins. Chazye hahu barnash de komirsas. Somebody noticed that Rabbi Ami was nervous, and he understood that Rabbi Ami was suspicious that he, that person who saw him, was a government agent who was going to confiscate this lost object and transfer it over to the government. Omalei, so that person told Rav Ami, Zil Shkol Nafshecha, take this lost object for yourself, pocket it. You have nothing to be afraid of. Don't worry about me. I'm not a representative of the Malchus. I don't work for the Persian government that demand that every aveda be returned to be given over to the Malchus. Tana Rabbanu, we learned in a Braisa, Evan Toen Hoisa B'Yushalayim. And it's interesting that the word Toen might actually come from the language of to claim. To make a claim, of course, in Lashon Kodesh is Ta'ana. Evan Toen, there was some central stone. And it would seem from the Braisa that this stone was located in Yushalayim. The Rambam, on the other hand, says it was outside of Yushalayim. But the Braisa that we have, it has it Hoisa B'Yushalayim. And Kol Misha Avdalo Aveda Niflasham, Kol Misha Motzi Aveda Niflasham became a meeting place for the finder and the loser. He who found the object that was lost and he who claims that he lost the object. Ze Omer Machriz, at that stone, at that central point, the finder would make his announcement that he found the lost object. Ze Omer Venosin Simonim Vinotla. And the other person who claims the object for his would give a simon and he would retrieve his object. Vizui Sheshaninu, and this about this Evan we learned in a Braisa in Masechta Tainis, in the famous story of Choni Amagol, who prayed for rains, and he would say, Tzura'u im nimchas Evan Hatoen. Did the rains come out? He would say, go check it out and see if God responded to our supplications, and the rains have already, the waters have risen to such a high level that they already have covered over this Evan HaToen. And at that point, Choni Amagol said, he declared, I will stop praying for rain, because we have an ample amount of rainfall and the water is already flooding, so to speak. In any event, we see that this Maisa, which is brought down in Tainis, is where the people said to Choni Amagol, please pray on our behalf, where there's a drought, we don't have rains. And he responded by saying, Tzu'u vehechnisu tanure psochim bishvil shelo yimoku. In other words, he was so confident, he told them to make sure that they would bring in from the outside certain kinds of ovens that might get ruined in the rain. But nevertheless, he went ahead and he prayed, v'lo yardu g'shamim, but the rains did not come down. Ma also, what did he do? Ug, uga, v'yomen b'socha, he made a circle on the ground and he stood inside the circle. V'yomen, he declared, lifnei ribono shel olam, in front of the Almighty, b'necha, Somu Paneam Eli, your children have turned towards me, they're dependent upon me, Shani, Keben Bais Lefanecha, that I'm close to you, I have an intimate relationship with you, God. Nishba, Ani B'Shimcha Gadol, I take an oath in your great name, She'eni Zazmikan, I'm not going to move out of this circle, Ad Sheterachim Ad Panecha. He really came with a demand from HaKadosh Baruch to have mercy on his children. His Chilu G'shomim Minatvim, and little drips of rain, Tipot Geshem started coming down, raindrops started falling, Omar, Lo kach shalti, that's not what I was asking for. Ele gishme boros sichin moros, vast qualities, amounts of rain that would fill up all the cisterns of water. Schil lerid bezav. Now the rain started coming down very hard, and that's very dangerous. Lo kach shalti said, I wasn't asking for torrents of rains. Ele gishme rotzon brocho nedova, but rather rains that express the will of God, His blessing, and His compassion on the people of Israel, yardu kitikunam, and then the rains fell exactly as they should. Achi yotzu Yisrael miYerushalayim lahar habayis mipnei agshamim. At some point, the people wanted to climb from Yerushalayim to ascend to a higher point, and they came up to the Har Habayis Bo vi Omrilo, and they turned to Choni Amagol, and they said to Choni Amagol, Kishem Shispalal to him, She Yerdukach Tispalu Alem, She Yelchulahem, Omlem Tsura U im Nimchas, Evan Hatoin. And that's where the story ends, on the note that the people requested of Choni that he pray that genug rains, no more rains, and he said, how high are the waters? Please check out the Evan HaToin. This is the Evan HaToin where the mitzvah Hashavas Aveda was fulfilled. Now, the Mefarshim want to know, when Choni Amagol was praying for the termination of the rains, why did he connect that with the Evan HaToin? And perhaps this is coming to teach us, says Tosfos Divrei HaMashchil Evan, that Kishem Sheha'Evan Eino Yechola Limochos Kach Ein Yecholim Lispal Al Rov Tova. In the same way, we need this Evan HaToin, and we're not going to be able to tolerate a situation where it is completely, washed away by the waters. So too, we should not pray for a great gift from Hashem that it should stop. And that's Tosfos in the name of the Yerushalmi. And one of the Sfarim, the commentaries on our Gemara here in Bava Metzia, is the Kos HaYeshuos, and he writes that what Tosfos means by quoting this Yerushalmi is to explain why Choni Amagol wanted to check, or wanted the people to check out if the Evan HaToin was covered with water, because this Evan, this stone, was very high, and the Machriz, the finder, would climb up to the top of the Evan when he would declare, when he would announce that he found the lost object, and since it was so high, it's not possible that it would be covered by water, even if there's a lot of rains coming down. Choni's message to the people, or implicit message, was that just like it's not possible for this very, very high stone to be covered by waters, by such high, high waters, so too it's impossible to pray to Hashem that he terminate the Tova, the great compassion, the great gift that he's bestowed upon us, the waters. And in the Shittim HaKubetzos, he adds another point. He says that the word Nimches means his Mosesa b'mayim. Shem shezelo yitochin kachlo yitochin lispal al rov tova shetiposek. It means that the waters would in a sense cause this stone to fall apart. It would melt, disintegrate, and that's impossible. And so too, it's impossible to pray to Hashem that he should stop Tova. And that would be antithetical to the purpose of Tefillah. Tefillah is to bring and to, generate Tova, goodness and blessing from Shemayim, not to terminate. That would be a misuse of Tefillah. And for that, we'd have to really study the Sugya in Tainus, and the Mishnah there to understand that. Now we're going to start the new Mishnah here on Chav Ches Amud Beis. And this is the first of two Mishnayos on the Amud. And we're talking about a person who found a lost object, and somebody comes as a claimant to identify the object. Omar Es HaAveda Velo Omar Simoneha. The claimant can tell you what you found, what the finder found, the nature of the object, and this again is going to reflect l'chora the shita of Yehuda that we mentioned the other day, that avedosa machriz, that the person who found something just announces that he found something. He doesn't mention what he found. So the claimant, his identity of the object is itself a proof. Says the Mishnah, if he doesn't give simonim, lo yitein lo. That's not enough.
We're not going to return the object simply because he can identify which object was found, the nature of the object that was found by the finder. V'haramai, supposing we have a person who claims the object that's lost, and he has a very bad reputation. We've seen him in Ramos in the past. He's cheated people, and therefore he is suspicious. Is Afal Pisha Omar Simoneo, even when he offers the Simonim and he identifies the object, Lo Yitain Lo, we cannot return the object to him, Shenemar, because it says in the Pasuk, the Mishnah quotes a Pasuk, Shenemar Adrosh Achicha Oso. And Lechachomim, we had this back on Chav Zainam and Beis, interpret this Pasuk, Ashe Tidrosh Asachicha Im Ramai Hu Im Eino Ramai, meaning if he's a Ramai, then we're not going to return an object to him, a lost object with Simonim, but rather we're going to require that he adduce the proof, the evidence of witnesses, of Edim, and less than that will simply not do. Already mentioned in the past that according to the Rosh, you can return to a Ramai an Aveda with a Simon Muvok. A Simon Muvok has the same status of a Vadai, of a certainty, like Edim, and even if he's a Ramai and he's Chashed and Sheker, we can rely on a Simon Muvok. Not everyone is in agreement with the Rosh, because if he's a Ramai, maybe he saw the Simon Muvok. He borrowed it, or he saw it, and he's lying when he claims it as his own. But that is the Shitas HaRosh. Now, the reason for this Drosh in our Mishnah, and we've discussed this in the past, is because you can't interpret the Pasuk Kipshuto straightforward, because what does it mean? You have to tell me that I return the object when the claimant comes knocking on my door. I mean, the finder doesn't know who owns the object. Who's he going to return it to unless somebody comes and claims it? But rather, let's interpret that the Pasuk is coming to tell you that you found this object, Darsheu. If somebody comes to claim him, Bidoresh, is he a Rami, is it not? Is he not? And if he's a Rami, don't return it to him with Simonim. You have to return it with him only, to him, only with Edim. Tosus, as we've pointed out in the past, let's just reiterate on Daf Chav Zayin, Amud Beis, Tosus says that this halach, that we don't return a lost object to a Ramai, even when he gives Simonim, is a Takonis Chachamim. Our Mishnah brings the Pasuk as an Asmachta. That's one answer of Tosus. But Tosus offers another answer, which he says that this din, that we don't return an Aveda with Simonim to a Ramai, is a Doraisa halacha, and that's what we have here in Tosus. Itmar, the Gemara says, Rav Yehuda Omar, Avedosa Machris, Rav Nachman Omar, Glima Machris. What is the substance, the nusach of the announcement according to Rav Yehuda? He simply announces, it's the most simple and non-revealing hachraza, that he found the lost object. Rav Nachman is of the opinion, no, he has to identify the object, otherwise the person who lost the object is not going to, it's not going to stimulate his mind. It's not going to generate some sort of question in his mind. Hey, I better look around. So glima machris means, according to Rav Nachman, announced that you found a glima, a talis. And then the person will take a look. It'll see, wait a minute, I'm missing my talis. The Ritva points out over here that this machlokes in our sugya is only after a historical period in which Rabu HaRamoyim, which we're going to discuss later on, that people were no longer so trustworthy. And therefore, Rabbi Yehuda is afraid of a Ramai. He doesn't want to give too much information in the Achraz and the announcement, because then the Ramai is going to come forward, and he's going to come forward and he's going to have such a taiva, so to speak, to the desire to get that object for himself. He's going to use all his trickery and his ramos in order to steal the object, take it for himself, and therefore don't give any information that might entice the Ramai. But says the Ritva, if not for the Rabu Haramoim, if not for that phenomenon, then Mikra Adin, when we go back to the pure halacha, even Rabbi Yehuda would agree that the basic rule would be Glima Machris, that he would tell people that he found such an object, so that they would really check and look to see if they might have lost it. So fundamentally, Rabbi Yehuda would agree Mikra Adin to Rav Nachman's definition. And the Ritva quotes a Gemara back on Daf Chaf Hey. Ravina says you should be machris matbeos. You should make an announcement that you found coins, meaning you should mention specifically the name of the Aveda that you found. And that again is reflective of the Ikar Adin, which is unanimously accepted by all the Amoraim, that you speak, you announce what exactly you found, the class or the category of a lost object. You don't just leave it in such a vague kind of way. Rabbi Yehuda, the Gemara says, Avedosa machriz, de'i amit glima machriz, chayshin and l'ramai. You know, once you tell the people that you found a glima, you found a talis, says Rabbi Yehuda, we have to worry and suspect a ramai. A Rama is going to hear that the finder found a talis. The Rama hears from the owner of the talis that he's telling his neighbors, you know, he lost his talis. That's when you misplace something, you immediately ask everyone in the close proximity, in the vicinity, did you find it? Do you know where I placed it? So now the Rama knows that the talis of Ploni, of Mr. So-and-so, is in the hands of Almoni, of the finder. He knows that the talis of Ploni looks like X, Y, and Z. It has his distinguishing mark. He knows it's Simonim. He's going to now give those Simonim, and he's going to take the talis for himself. And all this is because the announcement was, I found the talis. Therefore, Rabbi Yehuda prefers, let's just announce in a vague sense he found an Aveda. The Rama is not going to think, wait a minute, so-and-so's talis was lost, and he recognizes that with Simonim. And you've avoided the problem of the Rama. So the Ritva here asks Akashi, he says, the Mishnah tells us that we don't return an Aveda to a Rama with Simonim. So what are you worried about? You're worried about the fact that the Ramai knows the Simonim of this talis, even though it's not his, it belongs to so-and-so, and he's come forward with the Simonim and achieve his goal? But he's not going to achieve his goal because the Mishnah's already established that we don't return an object with Simonim to a Ramai. So the Ritva answers that we're afraid that the Rama is aware of the Sima Muvak of so-and-so's talis. And in the Sima Muvak, and we've discussed the Rush before, the Ritva accepts that principle of the Rush, we return a lost object even to a Rama. Which again is a little bit strange, because if the Rama saw the object, but apparently, you know, the Sima Muvak is somewhat subtle. You know, it might be in a very, you know, like we said, a small hole next to a certain letter on the get we discussed. You know, that is something that you need a real long-term intimacy and familiarity with the object and acquaintance with the object in order to know that Simon. And the premise is that only the Bailim, as a general rule, will be aware of that Simon Mufak. But the truth is that a Ramai might be aware of it. And that's what we're afraid of, that we're going to return this glima, this talis, to the Ramai based on the Ramai's ability to identify a Simon Mufak. That's what Rabbi Yehuda wants to avoid. The Ritva offers another approach, and he says that what we're afraid of here, the suspicion is that the Ramai, we're not talking about a Rama Yadua, someone who's known, you know, wanted dead or alive as a Rama. He has that reputation. He's been proven a Rama in the past. We're talking about a Stam Ben Adam. And your average person, in a situation where he knows the Simonim of this Talis, he might become a Rama. That's what we're afraid of. And if he's a Stam Ben Adam and he has, so to speak, a Cheskas Kashus, we're going to return the Aveda with a Simon. Rav Nachman Omar Glima Machris, he's not worried about a Ramai. Let's announce that we found the Glima. L'ramai lo chai shinun, dimkein ein l'dover sof. In other words, even if you announce you found an aveda without categorizing it and describing its nature, still you still have the problem of a ramai. You know, the ramai still think, well, you probably found the talis. I've been hearing so and so, my neighbor, you know, tell us in the vicinity that he's looking for his talis that's lost. So therefore, Rav Nachman says you'll never really solve the problem of a ramai. And you might as well go back to the Ikar HaDin, which, as we indicated before, even Rabbi Yehuda agrees that Mi Ikar HaDin, according to strict law, you should be telling the people out there what you found so that they'll, you know, you increase the possibility, the probability of the owner, the true, genuine owner, coming and retrieving his object by giving a simon. And basically, Rav Nachman is trying to juggle these two polar extremes that are in collision, that are a tug of war. On the one hand, we want to avoid the ramai, but on the other hand, we want to make sure that the Baal Aveda will come forward and give a simon and will fulfill the mitzvah as it was meant to be fulfilled of Hashavas Aveda. So in juggling these polar extremes, he says, let's give up on the ramai. We'll never solve the problem of the ramai. No way, no how. Let's try to facilitate the ability of the Baal Aveda to find his Aveda, retrieve it, even though we are exposing ourselves to the possibility of a Ramai. The Gemara now asks from our Mishnah, Kasha on Rav Nachman. Tanan, we learned in our Mishnah, Omar es ha-Aveda v'lo Omar es simoneh ha-reze lo yitein lo. The claimant, you know, who is a candidate, Baal HaVeda, he's a candidate, he has to prove himself. He says, you found such and such. This is the item you found. What was he thinking? He doesn't give any distinguishing marks, any simon. Why does the Mishnah have to tell me, lo yitein lo? Why would he even entertain that we litel? I amit bishlema avedosa machers. If we go with the opinion, the approach of Rabbi Yehuda, that the announcement was, I found the lost object, and nothing more, no more information is then we have a cycle daita to tell us that if he can identify which object he, the finder, found, that itself is a simon. Kamash Molan, and the Mishnah wants to tell us the Afagav the Omar Glima, even though he says, I know what you found. You found a talis, because that's what I lost. Nevertheless, Ki lo Omar Simonim, if he didn't give the Simonim, lo Madrinale. We're not going to return it to the claimant based on the fact that he can identify what was found. The announcement was that I found the talis. Is Omar Iu Glime Vyomar Iu Glime. The finder announces that he found the talis. The claimant claims, well, I know that you found the talis. Is Trichel Meme, do I have a Havamina Kilo Omar Simonim Lo Madrinale? Would we entertain the thought that would it cross our minds that he would be able to claim the object by saying nothing, by adding nothing? It must be that the Mishnah reflects the Shita Rabbi Yehuda, and the finder is only going to announce that he found an Aveda, stop, without going into details. And then we had a Havamina that maybe when the claimant says, well, you found a Glima, that itself is a proof. Omar Rav Safra tries to defend Rav Nachman, Li Olam Glima Machus. In truth, the finder is going to announce that he found a talus like Rav Nachman says he has to announce. Omar Iu Glima Viomar Iu Simonim. What happened here in this Mishnah is that the finder announced that he found a talus, and the claimant, who is hopefully the true, genuine Ma'abi, the one who lost this talis, he offers the simon. Umay lo omar es simoneha. What does it mean when the Mishnah says that since he didn't offer the simonim, therefore we don't return it to him? And the answer is, lo omar simonim muvhakim dida. There are two categories of simonim. There are simonim regulim, regular, classical, average simonim, and then there are simonim ufhakim that are absolute and very unique, very, very unique, and it's profound evidence. And the Mishnah is upping the ante here, they're upping the standards of Simonim, demanding, in order to be Machzer Aveda to someone giving the Simonim Muvhakim, less than the Simonim Muvhakim won't do. And therefore, when the Mishnah says, Lo Omar Simonel, what did the Mishnah mean by saying that? That lo omar simoneha, it means that he didn't give that category of simon, that higher category, which is called a simon muvhak. Now, in theory, the Gemara could have said that the Mishnah is talking about a fluky case where the person went ahead and instead of being machriz glima, which according to Rav Nachman he was meant to do, he just said aveda matzasi, and the Mishnah wants to mechadish that in such a fluky case, the claimant cannot retrieve his object by identifying the name of the Aveda. But the Gemara is not interested in setting up the Mishnah in that exceptional case. The Mishnah is talking about a normal case. And in a normal case, according to Rav Nachman, it would seem ostensibly that announcing the Glima and then the person comes forward and say you found the Glima would be meaningless. What was the Havamina that we would return the object to the Tovea? But the Gemara says no. That what the Mishnah wants to tell us is that the Ma'abed is not enough that he gives, he offers and presents a regular Simon, he's got to present a Simon Muvhak. And here Tosus, back on Daf Chav Zayin Amud Beis, and the Rashba here, and the Rosh also, they all point out that you shouldn't take this Gemara straightforward, literally, that you only return Simonim, you only return an object, a lost object with Simonim Muvhakim. We return an object even with a simon she'eino mufak. What the Mishnah is saying is, by using this term simonim, means that the claimant gave simonim that aren't reliable, and therefore we don't give it back. He has to give a simon. He has to offer a simon which is tov and not a simon garua. And we've said in the past that there's a whole gradation here that starts with the lowest level of evidence, the minimum level, all the way to the top, which is Edim. The minimal level of evidence, and this is below the red line, this is below par, is what we call a Simon Garua. You know, something which is so common. Like, for example, Aruch V'Katzer, was he tall, was he short, in the case of identifying a corpse. Those are Simonim Gruim. Then we get up to Simonim Tovim, which are normal, classical Simonim. You know, you can definitely identify the object by its marks. You know, you offer different measurements and weights and so forth and so on. Those, relative to Simonim Gruim, can be classified as Simonim Muvhakim. And then we get up to real Simonim Muvhakim, which even if you hold Simonim Derabanan, the Torah does recognize Simonim Muvhakim, like we had the case of a hole on top of a certain letter in the get, and with that Simon we could be Matir and Eishes Ish by returning the get to the Isha. And then on the top of the totem pole, we have Edim, who testified either Ariga or Edim Nefila, as we've discussed in the past. So to summarize, we thought that the Mishnah was a clear-cut proof to support Rav Nachman, to support Rav Yehuda against Rav Nachman, and we defended the Mishnah with a new interpretation of the Mishnah according to Rav Nachman. The Gemara now is going to quote a Braisa, which expands and enhances our understanding of Ramai. The Ramai in our Mishnah, even though he offers Simonim, we don't return the lost object to a Ramai. Tana Rabbanan, Barishona, initially, before a later Takana was established, Kol Misha of Delo Aveda Hayanosin Simonim Vinotla. In the original Takana, in the early stages of history, Simonim were considered reliable. Anyone who came forward, even if he's a Ramai, and he gave Simonim, we would return it to him. But Misha Rabu Haramoim, when the historical period was such that now there's a myriad of, you know, it's very common to have Ramoim, Hiskinu Shiyu Omrim Lo Tseva Ve Edim Delav Ramayat Vitol. Before we return this aveda to you with simonim, you're going to have to first establish your reputation that you're not a Ramai. Now, who is obligated to do such a thing? It's not clear. Are we talking about your average Joe has to bring Edom that he's not a Ramai? Or does your average Joe have a Cheskes Kashus? We're talking about a person who in the past had a bad record. He's established with a blemish on his record a status of a Ramai. Now he wants to claim he's a good guy. he did tshuva. He needs Edom to prove that. And then, and only then, can we return the Avedatim with Simon. Now, the Shita Megubetzes here says that today we do Achraza in a Beis HaKnesses, in the Beis HaMedrash. And why is that? After all, there's a possibility that the Ramai will hear about it. And the answer is that this is only applicable in a case or in a society where we know for a fact that there aren't any Ramai. Maybe there are Ramoim, but they don't show up in the shuls and in the study houses. There are no Anosim that are appointees of the government who will confiscate an Aveda. And if there are such people, then instead of publicly announcing the Aveda in the Beis HaKnesses, the Beis HaMedrash, he will notify his local neighbors in the place where the object was found, and that's sufficient, and that's how the halacha is codified in Choshim Mishpat Siman Reish Samach Zayin by the Mechaber. The Gemara now tells us a story about a scenario in which they needed Edim. They required Edim to return the Aveda ki ha, the Avua derav Papa, the father of a Papa, Irkas Le Chamora. He lost his Chamora, his donkey, Vashkechu, and it was found. And the father of Papa wanted to claim the chamor based on its simonim. Also, lekami de Rabba bar Rav Huna, the case came in front of Rabba bar Rav Huna. Omar le, Rabba turns to the father of Rav Papa, and he says to him, "Zil Aisi Sadi de Lav Ramoy at, that you have to bring Edim to testify that you're not a Ramai, Vitol, and then you can claim, and we will return to you this donkey with its simonim." Ozal Aisi Sadi, he, the father of Papa, went out and he brought Edim. Omar Lahu, so Rabbi Bar Rav Huna questioned, he investigated the Edim. Yadi Isun Be the Ramai Hu, do you know whether this person is a Ramai? And the Edim made a mistake, and they thought that they were being asked if they know that he's not a Ramai. He was actually asked, do you know whether he's a Ramai or not? They heard a question, can you testify to the fact that he's not a Ramai? The Omrule, and they responded to this question of Rabba in yes. In other words, he was asking, can you establish that this person is a Ramai? They thought that his intention was, can you establish that he's not a Ramai? They said yes. Amalahu, so the father of Papa says to the Edim, Ano Rama, Ano, he asks him facetiously, am I a Ramai? Amrule, Anan Lav Ramai At Kamrina. What we meant to say was that you're not a Ramai. That was our intention. Now, in effect, on a superficial level, on paper, the Edim are really retracting their original testimony. Because when the question was asked to them, do you know he's a Ramai? They said yes. It goes on record that they were testifying about this individual that he is a Ramai. Now they're claiming no. What we meant to say, what we should have been understood to say, was that he's not a Ramai. And the problem is that with regard to Eidus, we have a principle which is codified in the Sugya in Ksubas Yud Chesam and Beis, the Sugya of Shtaros, Kevan Shehigid Shuvein Echozum Magid. Edim did not have the power to rescind their edus. Once they've testified, Gandik, it's finished, finito. Omar Rabba Bar Rav Huna, Mistavra, it's logical to assume, Lo Maisi Inish Chovosa Lenafshe, that the Edim certainly did not have an intention to testify about the father of Papa that he is a Ramai. They know him to be a Ramai because these Edim were brought in, they were subpoenaed by the father of Papa himself. And it's not logical that a person would bring him Edim to testify against himself, to his detriment. The Ritva is very bothered by this sugya because the Gemara in Masechta Bava Kama in Gimel establishes that Edim do have the possibility of being Chozer Magid Toch Kidei Dibur. And here, even without the Svara that Rabba Bar Avuna is presenting here, that a person would not invite Edim to testify against himself, leave that Svara out. The Edim have a right to rescind their Edus Toch Kidei Dibur. And the Ritva answers that that halach of Toch Kidei Dibur of Chazara only applies when the Edim themselves, without being stimulated externally, decide that they made a mistake and they want to retract and rescind their original Edus. That's called Chazara Me'atzma Me'edusam. Here, the Edim only retracted their Edus because of the yelling and the screaming of the Baal Din. The Baal Din said to them, I brought you to testify that I'm a rami. Such a Chazara of Toch Kidei Dibur does not operate. Why is it logical to assume that the Edom are not retracting what they said, but they're explaining what they meant to testify from the get-go? And the answer is because character witnesses expect that you're going to ask a person, you're going to ask them, the witnesses, interrogate them about a person, is he a fine character? And they thought that the answer to that question, what they expected to hear, would be yes. The father of Papa has a tremendous, sterling character. He's reliable. He's honest. Instead, Rabba sort of pulled a fast one on them. And instead of asking them, well, can you tell me about Rabba Bar Papa, that he's a good guy? Instead, the question was, Yadusa Be Deramaihu, do you know him to be a rami? They didn't even anticipate or imagine that was the question. The question they heard was the question that he anticipated hearing was, do you know that he's reliable? That's what a character witness is there for. Before we start the new mission, I would like to make 2 points. Lufianias Daiti. Number one, that Misha Roboam Ramoyim changed the entire scene, and it would seem that anyone who comes to identify an Aveda is Bechezkas Sofek Ramai. And we're not going to allow him to give simonim and retrieve his object until he proves and establishes with character witnesses that he is reliable and he doesn't belong to, you know, this group of the prevalence of this group of ramoim. The second point I wanted to make is that we've mentioned before that there's a great number of rishonim that are of the opinion that even a rami would be able to retrieve the object if he identifies it with a simon muvhak. And therefore, I would suggest that if a person comes to claim a lost object, and we don't know his reputation right now, but what we do know is that he has a simon muvhak, in such a case, we would not require character witnesses if we assume that you can return an aveda to a rami with a simon muvhak. The mission establishes, with regard to Bali Chaim, a person finds a lost animal, that the finder has a special, unique responsibility of tipul, to take care of the animal. And the Mishnah formulates it thusly, Kol davar she'ose v'ochel, yase v'yochal, v'davar she'ein ose v'ochel, yimocher. And the premise here is that the finder, on the one hand, is obligated to do his utmost to return the object, to return the animal in this case. But on the other hand, he doesn't have to lose money on the deal. So what happens in the case of an animal? Clearly, the only possibility of holding out for the owner to come and identify his object is if you feed the animal, otherwise it's going to die of starvation. But on the other hand, why should the Baal Aveda be spending all that money? And here the Mishnah has two categories of animals. One category is an animal that can sort of work and pay its keep. It's an ose v'ochel. In other words, you can hire out this animal, let's say an ox or a donkey, which people hire, they rent, And the rental monies can be used to feed the animal. It's a square deal, and the motzi, the finder, is not losing on the deal. Yasev Yochal, the Mishnah says. He's going to rent out the animal, perhaps to others, or maybe if he wants to rent it for himself, he has to imagine in his mind a certain sum that would be the market value, the standard money or price that you would pay to rent the animal. And he's saving himself that money, or he may be actually taking in money. Again, it's not for his pocket, but it's money by renting out the animal to others on the market. He will take those rental fees and and use them to buy food and feed the animals. So in this case of an osev yochel, the finder is not going to be required to sell the animal, because the owner of the animal presumably would want to get his animal back. He knows the animal, he's been working with the animal, he's acquainted with the animal. Let's try as long as we can to keep the animal in the possession of the finder until we can locate the loser. But the Mishnah says if it's a davar she'eino osev yochel, it's not possible to rent out the animal, and with the fees, the income from that animal's rental, you would feed the animal. Examples of that would be, let's say, ducks or chickens. I mean, nobody rents out these animals. Nobody's willing to pay rental fees for a tarnagolis. Is then we're in a very difficult situation here. We'd love to return the animal to its owner, but we can't dig into our pockets and lose, you know, tremendous sums of money in order to keep this animal alive and sustain it by buying food for it. Is therefore yimocher. In this case, the best interest of the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda is to sell the animal, hold on to the monies that came in, on behalf of the owner. Shenema, we can derive this from the pasuk Vashivoso Lo, which means do whatever you have to do in order to return this lost object, or at least its value, to its owner. Re'ei heich tishivenelo. The Chacham interpret this pasuk to mean, discover the best method. You know, do your utmost of ishtadlus to work in terms of getting this finance, getting this money back, or its value back to its owner. If you find an animal that doesn't have any income to it, then okay, what are you going to do? You're going to feed it, and then how are you, the finder, going to get reimbursed for the monies that you spend in feeding it? You're going to demand that money from the owner. Rashi adds, Rei heich tishivenelo shelo tachilenu chatzidomov. In other words, if the animal is worth 100, it's okay to spend 50, up to half the value of the animal, by feeding it, by buying food for it, and get reimbursed. Then the owner of the animal is okay with that. You know, it's in his best interest that you kept the animal and you can return it, even though it's now worth, instead of, in terms of financial assets, it's not worth 100, because the owner of the animal is going to have to reimburse the finder up to 50. But up to 50, it's worth it for the owner of the animal. If, on the other hand, you're going to have to feed the animal, it's going to be more than 50% of its value, then better to sell it on the open market and cut your losses, you know, reduce your damages. And Rashi apparently is based on a Gemara later on, which we didn't get to, that says Shelo Yachil Egel Le'agolim, which means you found two agolim, two calves. You shouldn't sell one and use the money that we're addressing the finder, and use the money that you received for that one and buy food for the other one. And apparently what the Bryce is telling you is that the finder should not cause a hefse to the Baal Haveda up, you know, of 50% of the value of the Aveda. And when the Mishnah quotes the Pasuk Vashevos to Lo, keep in mind that the beginning of that Pasuk says, V'haya imchad rosh achicha ito. Obviously, if the Torah says hold it until the point when the owner comes to claim it from you, it means that when he comes to claim it to you, return it to him. These two words, Vashevos to Lo, are absolutely superfluous and unnecessary. Therefore, the Mishnah derives from them that in the case of Eino Osev Yochel, the best idea would be to sell the animal on the open market. Now, if he goes ahead and sells the animal, as he's required to do, mayehe bedamim, what should the father do with these monies that, you know, that he got in exchange for the lost, the object that he sold? Rabbi Tarfon Omer yishtamish bahen. Wow. Now, before we mention and try to understand Rabbi Tarfon, let's, in a sense, fast forward to Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva says that which is intuitive, that you're not allowed, the motzi is not allowed to use these mos. He's not allowed to benefit from them. He doesn't own these mos. These belong and you know, are designated for the owner of the object. And Rabbi Tarfon says no. The finder is allowed to use the money. He's allowed to take these funds, this currency, and invest it. But if he does so, if he takes advantage of that green light, which we don't know exactly why Rabbi Tarfon allows such a thing, then he suffers a certain drawback to it. Well, you know, every good thing has its limitations. And Rabbi Tarfon says, Lefichochim avdu chayv b'achar yusan. If the monies go down the tube, these mos that he received as payment for the aveda now are lost. You know, he made a bad investment, or the winds came and carried him away. Then he has to pay the baal aveda from his own pocket. He has an absolute responsibility, which is engendered by the fact that he's allowed to use the damim. Rabbi Akiva omer lo yishtamish bahen and lefichochim avdu ein chayev b'achar yusan. There's no responsibility imposed on the motzi, on the finder, because he doesn't have the benefit of being able to use the mos. He's not permitted to invest the mos or get any benefits from them. They are singularly and exclusively designated for the ma'abed, for the one who lost them, lost the object, I should say, and therefore he's not chayev b'achar yusan. And again, does he have some level of chayev achrayus? That we'll see in Yirtzeh Hashem in the sugya. Fine, the Mishnah says that a person finds an animal and it's an osa v'ochel. He should not sell it, but rather he should hire it out, and the monies are used to support and sustain the animal. The Gemara now wants to know, how long of a period of time does this animal have to stay, you know, within his possession, so to speak, you know, and oversee the hiring or the renting out of the animal and the feeding of the animal? Is there a period of termination when finally we could say to the Meshav Aveda, Ad Kan, you know, you've done your maximum and now you're exempt? So the Gemara says, the Gemara asks a naive question, Vili Olam, does a person have this obligation, the finder of Tipul, on this animal that he found, Li Olam, forever and ever? Is an open-ended thing for all eternity? Om Rav Nachman Omer Shmuel, Ad Shneimasar Chodesh. That we're going to impose an obligation on the finder to be metapel and all the hassle of renting out this animal and feeding the animal up to, but not beyond, 12 months. After the 12 months, he's allowed to sell it on the open market, and of course, he'll return that money to its owner. Tanya Nami Hachi, we have a brisa that supports this statement of Rav Nachman Omer Shmuel, called Dovisha Oseh V'Ocha K'om Parah V'Chamar. You can rent out a cow, you can rent out a donkey, is metapel ben ad shneim asar chodesh, up to but not beyond 12 months. Now, when do you start counting that 12 months? When does the clock start ticking? The Rambam's opinion is from the very day that he finds the animal. The Torah says that you only start counting from the day that he rents out the animal, meaning from the Yom HaTipul. The Rambam is learning that the 12-month period is inherent in the definition of Chiyuv Mitzvah Sashavas Aveda, which begins and is generated by finding the Aveda. The Torah understands that no, what we're trying to do is give a limitation to the Chiyuv Tipul. In other words, according to the Torah, there are two dimensions to the Mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda. One is the general halacha of the asaf del toch beisecha, that you have to take the object into a secure place, and you have to wait and do whatever you can to identify the owner of the object. That's the basic primary mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda. But the Torah postulates is another separate independent chiyuv, and that's tipul. That's within the general perspective or framework of Hashavas Aveda, but it's derived from the Pasuk Vashevoso Lo, Re'e Heich Teshivenu Lo, and you have a Chiyuv Tipul, to be mishtadel, to do whatever you can to make sure that you can return the animal, in this case, to its owner by either selling it or by working it and using the rental fees for its food. All that is a separate independent tipul that's engendered by the very day that he begins his tipul. The kickoff of his tipul is when he signs the rental agreement with Ploni Almoni on this cow or donkey. From that period of time of tipul, we give him a 12-month limitation. That's according to the tour. Now, Mikan V'Elech, the Braisa says, I should say the Braisa that's quoted here to support Rav Nachman Omer Shmuel, Mikan V'Elech, Shom Dmehem Umeinicham, which means that he does a Shuma, meaning an assessment, maybe he has to do that professionally, to determine what would be the market value of this cow or this donkey, given its age, its strength, etc., its health situation, and then he sells it based on that assessment. Umeinicham, and he holds on to the mos. And this would imply, if you take a look at Rashi, that let's just read the Rashi inside. Rashi says, "Shom dmeim mochron umeiniach adomim etzlo." He holds on to these mos. A Tosfos, not here, but elsewhere, interprets that what the Braisa means by Meinicham is that he should leave the lost object in his possession. Now, what does that mean? It means that he, the finder, can buy the animal himself. And the monies that he puts down, which after he's evaluated it by the market standards, is going to be held on to by the finder for the ma'abid, for the owner. And we're not going to distrust him. And as Rashi's implying, that we can't allow the finder to go this far and buy the article for himself. You know, there is a chashad, and the Rashba embellishes Rashi, that maybe if he sells it to himself or he buys it himself, you know, the monies will somehow get lost. And we can't trust him. But Tosfos says there's no reason why we shouldn't trust him. We don't need Beis Din to sell it on the market. The finder himself has rights to demonstrate his honesty by the very fact that he's willing to look for the bailum. He's being mekayim his chiyuv hachroza. He's doing vashevosa lo. He's trying to do the best he can, and we don't have any basis whatsoever for casting any sort of suspicion on the finder, and let him therefore buy it himself, and the monies that weren't received from externally from a buyer, but from the finder himself, let those monies be kept on behalf of the Baal HaVeda, and we can have full trust, says Tosfos, in the finder. Now, a golem, a person finds calves. That's an eagle is a calf, as we know from an unfortunate story in our Jewish history. And then it says sayochim. Now, what does the word sayochim mean? One thing I could promise you: these are animals which don't get hired out. You know, you don't do malacha with them, and that's why the Braisa here, which is supporting Rav Nachman Omer Shmuel, says Metapel behem shlosha chadashim. In other words, there's going to be a limitation again in terms of the chiyuv tipul. Mikan v'elech shom d'meim umeinicham, etc. So what is the deal? What's the story here with these agolim and sayochim? So what the thing that I can tell you is that the word sayoch is a young donkey, whereas the egel is a young para, a young cow, a calf. So that much we can say. But what's going on here? You know, if you find a cow and a donkey, not the child, you know, not the young cow, which is a calf, or the young donkey, which is called a siach, then we understand that these animals, the cow and the donkey, are work animals, and they could work and earn their keep. That's fine. However, these calves and young donkeys are too young or sensitive or too small maybe to do work. But for 3 months, we can expect that the finder will carry the expense of sustaining them, and therefore he's obligated to care for them, and he's not allowed to sell it. And we're going to soon see that according to the Shita Mekubetzes, there will be a natural appreciation in the value of this calf or young donkey as it grows, and therefore it makes sense to feed this animal up to a certain point. And although the loser, the ma'avid, will have to pay or reimburse the finder for the support that he's spending on these young calves and donkeys for 3 months, it's worth it for him, because even though the animal's not working, but there's a natural appreciation in the market value of as these animals, these young animals, mature and grow old. So that much we can understand. But Hamotzi, if somebody finds avazim v'tarnagolim, I guess avazim are ducks, or tarnagolim are chickens or roosters. Now we're talking about animals which these chickens, or perhaps you can call them geese. It's very difficult to compensate for the expense of keeping them up. There's no appreciation on the market of their value. However, in the case of females, they produce eggs. So Rashi points out here that you can sell their eggs on the market and use that money to maintain and sustain the roosters, the hens, I should say. And Rashi says, Tarnagolim zecharim she'en matilim beitzim. And mitapel bahem shloshim yom. We're going to require a very bare minimum amount of tipul in these cases. It's just not worth it to hesitate from selling it on the open market and converting it into mos, because they're going to eat you out of house and home. Mikan vielich shom dmeim umeinicham. So beyond that 30-day period, he assesses the value of these roosters, and he sells them on the open market. Now, here I wanted to mention to you just to review, the Rush says that he understood from Rashi that these animals, once the finder sells them, he has to go through the process of Bezdin. Bezdin is going to sell them on the market. And we're not going to trust the person, the finder, to buy it himself. Tosus, on the other hand, as we said earlier, allows that to happen. And Tosus points out that according to Rashi, it could be that the Shuma, the evaluation, the assessment of the value of the animal that was found and is being sold, has to be done by Bezdin, but the actual sale could be done, even according to Rashi, outside of Bezdin. What was the source for Rashi's premise here that we should be nervous about the finder himself selling it, or buying it, excuse me, and putting down the money himself? That's a Gemara later on, a Daf Lamed Ches, that deals with Kabayit Staka, and the case is where a person is in charge of charity money, and there are no poor people at this point. The Gaboim have a lot of coins in their pocket. And the fear is that if they hold on to these coins, they may be subject to ipush. Again, we didn't get to that yet, but some sort of a corrosive effect on these coins. And therefore, the Gemara says that what the Gabbai Tzedakah should do is they should take these small coins that are made of, you know, cheaper substances like copper or whatever that get ruined over the person's time, and they should cash it in for sloim. Sloim are larger coins made of silver or more durable metals that there's no problem of ipush. But all this happens with piru lefrotam yifritu bi'alma, meaning for other people, but the Gaboim should not do this process themselves because somebody might suspect them that they are embezzling the money of tzedakah. And therefore, Rashi would like to avoid any situation where the finder could be suspected by the onlooker of embezzlement. And therefore, he shouldn't be putting down the money from his pocket and buying the animal for himself. Now, the Brisa seems to indicate that at some point, the animals, let's say, for example, the roosters that we spoke about should be sold after 30 days, whether or not it's ose or ose v'ochel. Now, what that means is the following. Let's say we start with the cow, and the Brisa has you, the finder has him supporting the cow for up to 12 months. For a minimum of 12 months, if he hasn't located the owner yet. Then we went to the case of the calf, and we jacked it up to 3 months. And then, in the case of the roosters, we have only a 30-day period. It seems that, offhand, that in all these three cases, there is some minimal amount of income that could be used to support the animals. Again, animals fit into different categories. There are work animals like a cow, or like a donkey that could be rented out at a full price for a year. There's no problem. There are other animals which are smaller. They can only be rented out maybe for a shorter period of time, or we discussed before, the appreciation on the market. Then there are even smaller animals than that, which, you know, within 30-day period, it makes sense that even it's an eino osa v'yochel that you impose a chiv tipul, and the finder has to keep it and feed it. The Mishnah, on the other hand, seems to contradict that very premise, that very principle, and assume that if it's an Ein Osev Ochel, it should be sold. The Brisa doesn't seem to make that distinction. And Pashtus would be, even in the case of, or Dafka in the case of roosters, that it's an Ein Osev Ochel. But the Brisa doesn't really make that distinction. It seems to say that Agolim Usiochim is metapel ben shloshah chadoshim, or for example, Avozim Tanagolim metapel ben shloshim yom, even if it's an Eino Osev Yochel. So the Taras Chaim that we've quoted many times suggests the following, that the Mishnah never meant to say that if it's an Eino Osev Yochel, he must immediately sell it. If the finder decides that he would like to hold on to the animal for a certain period of time, then he doesn't have an obligation to sell it. That's in the case of Osa V'Ochel. So again, even though the tipul is a hassle, he's, you know, renting out this cow or this donkey and all the things that are involved, and he's feeding the cow, keeping it, maintaining it, sustaining it, he's allowed to sell it after a period of 12 months, but he doesn't have to. If he wants to go beyond the letter of the law, he's allowed to do so. In a case, however, of a dover she'eino osev ochel, here the animal has to be sold whether or not the finder wants to keep it or doesn't want to keep it. That's an absolute requirement, says the Mishnah, because we have to protect the owner from taking a loss. He's going to have to reimburse the finder for all the outlay and the expenditures of food to sustain the animal. So what the Taras Chaim is adding here is that when you read the Mishnah says, "Kol dover she'osev v'ochel yaseh v'yochal." It doesn't mean endlessly. It doesn't mean, you know, an open-ended ticket. And what we're quoting the Brisa here is to reinterpret the Mishnah in saying that eventually you are allowed to sell it. The Mishnah is not, the Brisa is telling us, let's say in the case of a cow, ad Yud Beis Chodesh, it doesn't mean that after Yud Beis Chodesh he must sell it. The Mishnah didn't say that at some point you have to sell it, but rather after 12 months he's allowed to sell it. So basically what we're saying is that there's no contradiction between the Brisa and the Mishnah, the Mishnah is talking about the possibility of his holding on to it if it's an osa v'ochel endlessly. If so, the finder chooses to do so, and the Bryce is telling him that after 12 months he's allowed to sell it. And then we had the machlokas Rishonim about what it means he's allowed to sell it. Can he buy it for himself, or he has to sell through Bezin on the open market, etc. Now, we've had already two brises here on the Mishnah. And when we compare and contrast the two brises, we see a certain contradiction between the two brises, and that's going to be the sugya that we're about to learn now. Because the first brises says, in the case of Parv HaChamor, is the requirement is Ad Yud Beis Chodesh. In the case of Agola Musyachim, it's Shlosha Chadoshim. The second brises says that in the case of a smaller animal, then it's going to be shloshim yom, agolim usyachim shloshim yom. That's what we're going to see at this point now. Omar Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak Tarnagoles kibehema gasa. The status of a hen that is producing eggs, that's laying eggs, is that of a behema gasa. Just like a behema gasa, a large animal, can be rented out, and the rental fees will offset the loss of the payment for its food, its sustenance. So too, in Tarnagoles, the market value and the income of the eggs that it's laying offsets the tipul and the expenditures of food to pay for the maintenance of the tarnagolis. Tanya Nami Hochi, we have a braisa that supports Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak, tarnagolis ube magasa metapul behen shnei masar chodesh. Mikan v'elech, after the 12-month period, in both the case of tarnagolis that's giving birth to eggs and the behema gasa that can be rented on the market, after the 12-month period passes, is sham d'meyem umei nicham, as we interpreted it in the Torah's Chaim, he's allowed to sell it. He's not required to do so. The Mishnah didn't indicate that at any point in an osa situation he has to sell it. But now the Brisa says, ha'golam usiochim etapel behem shloshim yom. In the previous price, so we had Shlosha Chadoshim. Now we have only 30 days. Mikam v'yelech shom dvei manicham. Avazim et harigolim chol dover shetipula meruba mischaro. In these cases of the small geese or chickens, which are male, as we saw, are not producing eggs, and therefore the money that you're spending on feeding them exceeds beyond the value of any sort of rental that you could, any sort of income you could get from these animals, is them etapel behem shloshi yomim. Here we had in the first price shloshim yomim. Kam v'elech shom d'meim meinichon. So the Gemara says, kasha agolim usyachim agolim usyachim, because the first price said that agolim usyachim is 3 months, correct? 3 months. Whereas the second price says it's 30 days. And in addition, is avazim v'tarnagolim, avazim v'tarnagolim. We have a stira between the first brisa that establishes that in the case of avazim v'tarnagolim, these roosters and geese, is shloshim yom, 30 days, not beyond. Whereas, according to the second brisa, the tipul is only 3 days. So you see clearly that there's a pattern here. In terms of the obligation of tipul imposed upon the finder, the first brisa is much more machmir, requiring in both agolam usyachim a longer period of time, namely 3 months as opposed to 30 days, and in the case of avazim tarnagolim, a full 30 days rather than 3 days. And the Gemara tries to reconcile these two brises. How so? Agolam usyachim lokash, I can reconcile the apparent contradiction with regard to the calves and the young donkeys. Ha de raya, v'ha de pituma. Raya means that we're talking about a case where there's a makom mira, there's a grazing area, and we're talking about a period of the season of the year where there's plenty of grass that's accessible in that area for grazing, and therefore tipul is limited. The amount of tircha and work and expenditures for maintaining the, sustaining the animal and feeding it is very, very limited because we're talking about a raya. And the brisa, and therefore the brisa is going to expand and be more strict and demanding on the finder to extend the tipul period for either 3 months or 30 days. That's as far as the first brisa is concerned. But the second brisa, which is much more lenient on the finder, that's de pituma. Pituma means that there's no grazing area to be found. The literal translation of the word pituma is fatten the animal, vilashin mifutam, but that requires a lot of work to purchase food and feed the animal. You can't just let the animal go out to pasture because there's hardly any area for pasture. And maybe it's during that time of the year where there is no pasture area. So you can't just, you know, let the animal die. You can't just let it out to pasture. But you have to actively get involved in fattening the animal. Now the Gemara goes on and says that avozim v'sarnagolim, avozim v'sarnagolim nami lokash. There's no question about the apparent contradiction of the two brises regarding roosters. And that's because habiravare habizutre, the brisa that, you know, goes easy on you, the second brisa, are, you know, is talking about a case of ravave. Ravave means a larger rooster, whereas the brisa that is more machmir is in demanding a 30-day period of time of tipul. That's referring to zutre. These are smaller animals. It's not so expensive to sustain them. It's not a great deal of work either because they eat, you know, a very limited amount. Now, all this we get from Rashi, Dibra Maschil Ravrave. He says, Ochlim Harbe. They eat a lot, these larger animals, and therefore Gimel Yomim, Hilka Gimel Yomim. Again, we're talking about roosters that are not female, and they're not producing eggs. And the previous Rashi, Adaraya Hadabituma, Rashi says that the Shlosha Chadashim of the first Brisa is talking about a case, let's say the 3 months of the second Brisa, the requirement in the case of calves and young donkeys of only 3 months. Go over this one more time to make sure we have the cheshbon. The first price in the case of agolim usiochim, these calves and young donkeys, requires tipul of a minimum of 3 months. And that chumra, Rashi says, hadiktoni shlosh chadoshim is be'eretz mireh bizman hadashoyim. Shein tipul omerubu. We're not asking too much work, and therefore we could be more machmer on him. It's a minimum amount of work because, number one, Rashi says, there's an Eretz Mira, there's plenty of grazing area. Number two, it's Bizman Adshoyim. It's that period of time where the grazing area, you know, the areas are producing plenty of grass. And then Rashi says, Hodek Toni Shloshim Yom, that's where we have to be a little bit more easygoing with the finder. That's the second price, so 30 days is sufficient, and that's because Ein Mira, Vitzarch Lefatma, you're going to have to do a lot of work in order to sustain and feed the animal. It's very limited. It's a scarce time period, a scarce area as far as grazing is concerned. That's Rashi, Diva Maskel Hodaraya Hodiftuma. Now, the Shittim Kubetzes has the exact opposite in terms of his understanding of the Gemara. And now it's focused on Avozim V'Tarnagolim. We spoke about the larger roosters and the smaller roosters, and we assumed, and here we are very much influenced by Rashi, who says, Ravrave Ochlim Harbe. Oh, Rashi's learning it's too demanding on the finder to, in the context of the second brisa, which is talking about Tarnagolim don't that eat so much, to require of the finder to hold on to this, you know, this rooster for such a long period of time, this large rooster, and feed it so much. Comes along with Shittim Kubetzes, and he says that the larger roosters and ducks and geese and the like, they're so large that they have the ability to find their own food. They go out there into the rubbish dumps, and you don't really have to spend much time or effort in feeding them. And therefore, the first brisa that requires a full 30 days is discussing Rav Ravei. The smaller ones, they don't know how to go into the ashpa and find their own food. Here, the work and the expenses, the hotzos are very stiff, and therefore the second brisa, in this case of the smaller roosters, allows you to get away with only 3 days of tipul. Now the Mishnah says, if it's an eno osa v'yochel, it should be sold. Tana Rabbanan, we learned in a brisa, vashevosa lo, rei hech tishivenu lo, shlo yachil egel lagolim, siach l'siachim, avaza l'avazim, v'tarnagol l'tarnagolim. Right? It doesn't. So it means that you don't sell one egel in order to use its money to feed the other egel. You don't sell one young donkey, if you found two of them, in order to feed and maintain the other young donkey. You don't sell a duck in order to one of the two ducks in order to feed the other duck, and not one rooster in order to feed the other rooster. I've already discussed that Rashi in the Mishnah seems to indicate that you can spend up to half the value of the animal in food, and that's worth it for the owner, even though he's going to have to reimburse the finder, because he still gets a profit of 50% plus by having his animal returned to him. The Marsha says that the Bryce is not telling us that we should not feed the animal. One could, again, like, this is a double negative, so let's say it in the positive. We could have said, and we're going to say not like this, that the Bryce is telling you don't feed the egel with its own funds, right? With mei atzmo. No, says the Marsha, that's not the case. But rather, he finds two agolim, and let's say, for example, the price of each one is 100. Well, let's say the price of one of them is 100. The price of the other one is 200. I could think that he could sell the one that worth 100 in order to feed the other egel that's more expensive, which is worth 200%, twice the amount, and that would be great for the owner, because it's a value that doesn't even reach half of the value of the lost object. The total loss here, because he has two agolim that he lost, would be 300, right? 100 for one egel, and the other one that's more expensive is 200. That's total 300, half of which is 150. And now by selling the first egel, which is 100, it still is less than half of the value of the entire Aveda, because the value of the entire Aveda is 300. By selling the cheaper, less expensive egel, which is only a loss of 100, it still is less than half of the value of the total Aveda. The total Aveda is 300, half of which is 150. By selling the first egel, he's still within that realm of half. It's a lot less than half. It's 100 compared to 150. Half would have been 150, and he's only selling 100. Because, again, the total value of the Aved is 300. The Bryce is coming to tell us not like that, because if he does sell the first one at 100, he's going to return the second Egel to its owner. Although it's true, and that's what the Marsha points out over here, that you will, in effect, be causing a loss in terms of the agolim of less than half of the worth of the agolim, but you've still forfeited one of the two agolim. You've sold the cheaper one. That's why what the Bryce is advocating is, instead of selling the cheaper one, he should feed the cheaper one, the less expensive egel that's only worth 100 on the market, up until half of its value. which means that if it cost him, let's say, 50 out of the 100 to support the animal by buying food, etc., that's what he should do, the finder. And then he should return, hopefully, both our golem to the finder and the loser. And the loser will now pay him and reimburse him, the finder, for the 50 of the hotel. That's the best option. And that's what the Braisa is advocating. The Mishnah says, Mayehei bedamim. What happens to the monies? Rabbi Tarfon mishtamish behen. And Rabbi Tarfon says that the good news is that the finder is allowed to take this money that he received from the sale of the lost object and invest it, use it, and benefit from it in every way he sees through. But the bad news is that if this money is lost, he's going to have to replace it. Rabbi Kiva says no, that he's not allowed to use it, and if this money is lost, he's potter. He doesn't have to pay. He has no chiv achrayus. And it's clear from the Mishnah that the nidon here, the discussion that we're having here about whether the finder is obligated in achrayus vis-a-vis the monies that replace the object that came in as assets when the object was sold, all depend upon whether or not the finder is allowed to use the mos or he's not allowed to use the mos. Says the Gemara, Ad kan lo pligi, the machlokas between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon, as far as Achrayas is concerned, the case of someone who finds an Aveda, and here we're turning to page Chavtes Omen Aleph, Ella Kishen Ishtamish Bahen. In a case where, because he had the green light, according to Rabbi Tarfon, to use and invest this money, is therefore he picks up Achrayas, Avalon Ishtamish Bahen. If, let's say, he did not have the green light and the permission to use these monos, in avdu potter. If it's lost, he doesn't have to pay for this. And that's the way Rashi understands it. If you take a look at Rashi, Dibra Maschil Kishenish Tamish, Rashi says, Lav Dafka, don't take the Gemara literally, that he actually used the money, and therefore he's Chayv and Achrayis. But it means, Mishum Schar Shimushkom, Neshem Mutal Ishtamish. In other words, he gets a certain benefit, the finder, knowing that he's allowed to use the money. He hasn't actually spent the money in any way. And that's going to mean that we jack up his status as a shomer to a shomer sachar, because he's being paid for this. And what's the payment, in quotation marks, is the fact that he's allowed to use the mos. We're not talking about a case where he actually used the mos, which would have been the straightforward translation of the Gemara, but rather heter tashmish. And based on this Rashi, we're going to explain the next piece of Gemara. When the Gemara says Avalon Ishtamish Bahen, it means if he has no Heter Ishtamshus, meaning according to Rabbi Akiva, he's not allowed to use the money, therefore he has no benefits from the money even before he uses it, right? And he's not jacked up to a Shomer that has Achrayus. Rabbeinu Peretz, however, quotes a group of Mefarshim that interpreted this Gemara straightforward, Kibshuto, that the Machlokas is only relevant if he actually used the money, Befal. Then Rabbi Tarfon says, and only then, that he's Chayv Achrayus. If he hasn't used the money, then even according to Rabbi Tarfon, he's not Chayv B'Achrayus. But Rabbi Ben Peretz rejects this Pshat, and he supports Rashi's interpretation, that's the Heter Ishtamshus. So the Gemara now says, Lema Tevi Tuvta Dirav Yosef. And here we're going to enter into the famous issue, which is the subject of a long, profound sugi in Perek HaKonis in Bava Kamma. What's the status of a Shomer Aveda? Is he a Shomer Chinam, or is he a Shomer Socher? And Emir Tzashem will pick that up in the next year.